the only tool that we really have is our bodies too. So it's this idea of your body is your territory of oppression, but also is your tool for fighting and for resistance.
Hello and welcome to Season 6 of the Art Persists podcast, a series by Bostler Arts offering a glimpse into the life of artists and activists from all over the world, here to share their stories with you, the listener. My name's Georgia, and kicking off Episode 1 of Season 6 is the Chilean collective Las Tesis. Las Tesis is an artistic, interdisciplinary and feminist collective from Valparaiso in Chile. The collective is dedicated to spreading feminist theses and demands through performance and video performance, combining performing, sound, graphic and visual arts with history, philosophy and social sciences. I've been a fan of Las Tesis for a very long time, so it was a real honour to sit down with Sibila and Daphne from the collective. And in this conversation, we really talk about all of their amazing work, the feminist thread throughout every performance work that they do, including A Rapist in Your Path, one of their early works that ended up going viral, which is how I found out about the collective, and performed in over 50 countries by different groups. Thank you to both of them for joining us, and I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Hi, Las Tesis, and thank you so much for coming on the Art Persists podcast. We're such huge fans of your work, so it's a real, real pleasure to have you on. Your website describes you as a collective dedicated to spreading feminist theses and demands through performance and video performance, combining performing sound, graphic and visual arts with history, philosophy and social sciences. And so I was wondering if you could tell us in your own words how you started the collective and why you started the collective.
Yes, of course. Well, hi, everyone. I am Sibila from Colectivo Las Tesis, and also Daphne is here.
Hello, everyone.
So you can recognize our voices. Yes, we started the collective in 2018, in the beginning of the year, but it was actually an idea that we had like for a long time before that. This idea of how we can do for spreading feminist ideas, feminist theses, feminist theories, but through performance, like based in our own bodies and performing it, like making kind of an exercise of translating these theories, these ideas that sometimes you can find in books, but also in the medias. Yes, like more into text, into words, but translated into translating them into sound, visuals, music, also body, etc. That was very important for us as a main goal, because we think that doing this, we could spread these ideas and bring them to people that maybe are not going to be able to have access to feminist books, for example, or yes, feminist encounters, you know, like no. So it was, how can we bring this to other people who actually don't really relate maybe with this and still can be in touch somehow with this? But it was very difficult because in our country, as artists and professors also, it is difficult, you know, like economically, and to have the time to have a project like this without financement, you know, that's the way that we work until this day. But in that moment, it was a moment where me and Daphne started living together, sharing a house, like roommates. So we decided that was the moment, you know, because even if we don't have the time, because we have to work in other stuff and la la la, it was the moment where we can gather, and even if it is in the kitchen at night, drinking some tea, you know, and start discussing this project. And that's how the collective actually started. And then we invited other people to join us.
And obviously your collective is very feminist, and it's about, and through your work you draw on a lot of different, as you've said, concepts and texts. Could you maybe tell us a little bit, for those who may not know about Chile specifically, what are some of the maybe challenges that women face growing up in Chile?
Bueno, no lo sé. Quizás podemos contarle que Nosotras dos venimos como de familia
Daphne was saying that she don't really know, but maybe it is important to tell you that both of us grew up in houses with only one person in charge of us, our mothers, actually. Mm. Here we call it monoparental. I don't know how to translate that, but it means that you don't have like both her, you know, figures at home,
yeah.
but only your mom. And that's very important because when you grew up watching your mother taking charge of you, it immediately sets like a precedent on how you're going to see the world, you know. Sometimes it's not when you're so young, it's something that you start seeing it more clearly when you grow up, but it is an important precedent on the way you see the world and how you understand also different types of violences.
Yeah.
For example, the fact that a woman alone has to be raising, you know, another girl by themselves in a country where we don't have like a welfare state, you know, it really, it's up to you. So it's very difficult. And also these violences that we could watch in that moment, like growing up, like in our own houses, because of the abandonment also, you know, in our families. It's also something that we could see in education. You know, we grew up in the 90s, and education in the 90s, also in the 2000s, was very sexist. It still is, but that in that time it was like very, very much sexist. Like all also the reference, you know, like the books that we used to read in schools, but also in the university, was very like white, European, male, you know, like very, there wasn't other points of view. So it's really like a path that we had to create, you know, a path that you create for yourself, that we created for ourselves, or trying to look for other reference, in this case, like feminist references, you know, but also it's a path of really marked by an own need, our own motivation to looking for this, to how we can stop normalizing all these violences with which we grew up, you know, from our family history, but also in the society in general.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, what is so powerful about your work is that even as you're saying it, me sitting in London in the UK, I can recognize a lot of, I can relate to a lot of what you say, even though our contexts are very different and our upbringings probably are very different. And so that's why I think, you know, I was introduced to your work through A Rapist in Your Path, this amazing performance that you did that subsequently went viral and was repeated by other groups in over 50 countries. And just to translate some of the text in it, you end it saying, "And the fault wasn't mine, not where I was, not how I dressed. The rapist is you, and then the oppressive state is a rapist." I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that work, and specifically like the choreography and how you came up with it, because it is so powerful to watch, particularly women taking up public space, which I think is something that actually we don't see that much. Public space remains to be a masculine space. So yeah, the significance of that, and then also how it felt to see it resonate with so many people all around the world.
We can really relate with this idea that the public space is actually a more masculine, like in an hegemonical, I don't know if you say like that way of understanding masculinity, you know, the public space. Here is also like that. And we see differences, of course, in the context of protest and how we activate the political from the south by taking that public space, even if it means that it puts you at risk. And for us, when we decided to do this performance in the public space, like on the street, in the context of a political uprising happening here in Chile in 2019, a context where we were denouncing not only sexual violence, but also sexual political violence that was being perpetrated by the police in the context of protests, you know. So it's going to the street to tell them what they're doing. But also when you're doing it, you're facing the possibility of being a victim of this sexual political violence that you are denouncing. So yes, it was a very critical moment for us here in Chile, but it was something that we felt was really needed.
Yeah.
Like we needed also to talk about that. And it wasn't only an issue for women. It was also an issue for queer people more in general. So that's why we are, since the beginning when we made this open call, it was always from women, but also for everyone who identified as someone in the LGBTQIA plus community, you know. For us, it was very important, this idea that it's a problem that we share, actually. It's not only for women. But when we took this decision to go into the street with this performance, to make an open call, it wasn't something that we did before, you know. We were working from before, yes. We were working from before regarding the subject of sexual violence. We were preparing a performance called The Rapist Is You, El Violador Eres Tú, that was based in some ideas of Rita Segato, an Argentinian anthropologist, but also some figures, statistics of sexual violence in our country, like the official ones, the non-official ones, etc., etc., and other ideas from other authors like Virginie Despentes from France, from the King Kong theory. We like to do that, you know, how these different points of view can actually together articulate themselves to speak about something. And the main idea of that was that rape and sexual violence, and rape specifically, is actually not a private problem, as we generally have been told that it is. It is actually a social problem. It's society that promotes even, that allows this type of violence to happen. And it's the same with sexual political violence. So that was the context. That was how we create the performance. But it wasn't thought for this context of the political uprising that happens after, that we already create the performance. So what we did is that we adapted it. We had a song that this part of our methodology, like me doing a synthesis of the main idea of what we're trying to say. We had that song. And then we decided to make this open call to take it into the street as a public intervention, as a public performance. We create this choreography. But of course, for us, it was very important to keep it simple, you know, like how we can have some moves that can symbolize something deeper and wider, but it needs to be very simple because we need people to learn it with us. We didn't thought that this was going to be replicated after. It was only a performance of a one-time situation, like doing it here in Valparaíso on November 19, 2019. Three different points of the city, and it's over, you know. And then all that happens later, it's because of other people that start taking this performance and, you know, into their own context and et cetera. But in the beginning, the idea was that, like, doing something short and sharp, you know, like something that's very clear, but simple also. But also it's complicated in a profound way. You could say that if you start like taking the little pieces, it's going to take this to something more deep. But in the, like, the way that we're going to do it is like keep it simple, because it's not something only focused for performing artists, you know.
Yeah.
It's something that the idea was that everyone kind of can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it truly is so powerful. Kind of when I first watched it, I remember like the hairs on my body like stood up, because it's just seeing that collective action is really, really powerful.
Hi, this is Hossam Fazula, co-founder of Bosla Arts. The Art Physicist podcast is independently run by Bosla Arts, me and Georgia, which allows us to share these important conversations with artists and activists from all over the world. In order to keep having these conversations, we need your help. Join us on Patreon for as little as £3 and help us continue this vital work. More info in the episode description. Now back to the podcast.
You talked about risk and police violence. And in 2020, you collaborated with the Russian dissident group Pussy Riot for a piece called Manifesto Against Police Violence. And in it, you end with the phrase, "The police don't keep me safe, my friends keep me safe." And ironically, after you published this on the internet, you had two cases filed against you by the police, one for contempt of authority and the other for the incitement of violence. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a bit about, first of all, about this work, this piece, And also that experience of then actually having risk to your rights being taken against you.
Es irónico como tú lo dices.
It's ironic, like you say.
Pero este país es bien irónico en realidad, así que se condice con eso.
But this country is very ironic, so it's kind of like coherent, you could say.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, it's like logical in the end.
Yeah.
Sí, pero quizás es una fue para nosotras también, aparte de
yes, it's quite ironic, but even if it brought us a lot of like bad things, you could say, like personally and collectively, of course, it wasn't something nice, you know. Mm. It's still important to mention that it's a demonstration, you know, of the power actually of art,
yeah.
Like the transformative power of performance, this idea that it can actually bring social and political changes. And yes, when we see that this action, an artistic action, a performance, like a street intervention, suddenly brings a reaction from the police, accusing us of being violent when we're actually living in a very violent context from them, like living in a militarized context, you know,
yeah.
That's the irony. So yes, for us, this reaction was actually something that underlined this thesis, like this theory that we already had, that we already believe in this transformative power of performance. It was like, actually, we're right.
Yeah.
It has a transformative power, because if we see this reaction, it means that something is happening, you know?
Porque si no, no hubieran reaccionado de la manera en que reaccionaron.
Absolutely. And I think doing it with Pussy Riot was so powerful because it's, again, two very different contexts and countries, but you see also the threat of also female artists and how much they can disrupt as well. So it was really, really powerful. And just kind of thinking about how it connects to the past, I guess. Tanta Impunidad was a performance I think you did towards the end of last year on the 50th anniversary of the military coup in Chile, mm-hmm. which brought the devastating dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet. Can you tell us a bit about that work and how it felt to make that work and reflect on, so, you know, 50 years is not very, very long time, and kind of reflect on the then and now?
Bah, last year was a very difficult year, actually, in our country, because everything was a little bit about this 50 years from the dictatorship, from the beginning of the dictatorship. And we live in a country that had some, you could say, like repair actions, like from the state,
yeah.
regarding this violence that we experienced as a society during the dictatorship, as a country, but not enough, you know? So suddenly was this idea of trying to repair something in 1 year that they didn't do it in more than three decades of democracy. You
yeah.
know, it was a little bit like that. So for us, it was very important to point out like some specific types of violence that actually work as a continuum. That it wasn't something that happened during the dictatorship and then ended, but how there is some type of violences, state violences, that are still happening even in democracy.
Yeah.
Esta performance de Tanta Impunidad habla justamente de eso.
So this continuum of that Tanta Impunidad is talking about is actually the continuum of sexual political violence. That was the one that we wanted to point it out, because of course there was many different types of violence or state violence still happening until this day. But for us, it was very clear how sexual political violence against women and queer people, you know, like this idea of feminized bodies more than women, you know, like this idea of the feminizations of bodies, this sexual political violence for these types of bodies as a form of torture was something that we lived during the dictatorship, you know, as a country. But actually, every time that there is a crisis, comes again, you know, it's again a tactic of torture, of violence, specifically for these feminized bodies. You know, we could see it also in the political uprising of 2019, but also in different moments of crisis in our country. It's something that is always there. Like very quickly, we can see that this type of specific violence is used. And for us, it was very important to point it out, you know, like why this is always there? Why is something that never stopped actually? And we see it not only here in Chile, we see it in many, many different contexts also. We see it right now in Gaza and, you know, et cetera. We could talk about it in many different contexts also.
Feminizado, mujeres y disidencia. Sí, como esa estrategia de guerra.
It's this idea of a strategy actually of war, like a strategy that has been happening for centuries and has managed, you know, to go through history as a way to fight your enemy, but through the bodies of women and queer people, you know.
Yeah.
It's something that Rita Segato also talks a lot about it, but for us it's like so clear how it is inscribing our bodies, and it actually goes from generation to generation also, you know.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's so right. I mean, you see it everywhere. Anytime there's a conflict, anytime the women symbolize even the country. So by assaulting her, by abusing her, you're kind of like taking revenge, for example. It's very, very poignant. And I love your book, Set Fear on Fire. And I'll put a link in the episode description to it because it's a really fantastic book. I love this line where you say, our bodies are territories of exploitation and at the same time also of resistance. And I think it's a really good point. And I think your work really exemplifies this idea of like the collective. And I kind of wanted to end on this idea of care and safety, because also in the book you talk about the forcing of women to take the domestic role within a patriarchal capitalist society, but also the power of care, which you say care is a collective and social question, not an individual one. And I wondered if we could end just on thinking about this idea of care as a collective and how you view that through your art, kind of taking away the domestic role of women that we're forced into and instead having this kind of support through coming together, through working together.
Yes, the first part of your comment for us has been like the base, kind of the foundation of our work, actually, like to realize like how our conversation actually began. Like, where does this realizing about the violence that actually we carry with us in our bodies, in our own bodies, what happened with that and what can we do with that? So for us, it became very clear that the first territory of oppression, of course, there is extractivism, like in the land, you know, like in our territories where we live. But there's also this violence, oppression, and extractivism in our own bodies. So for us, when that became so clear, it was very clear that also the only tool that we really have is our bodies too. So it's this idea of your body is your territory of oppression, but also is your tool for fighting and for resistance, but also in this collective, broader point of view. For us, it's been very clear how, for the feminist movement, the individual struggle, the individual fight is there, of course, but it's always in the service of a collectiveness, you know? Like, for us, it's so important that this idea of our bodies, our own tools of resistance, is our collective bodies. This idea that we are part of a collectiveness, of a collective body, that together is stronger and together can actually resist in a better way than doing it by yourself, you know? So that's always our advice for people that are struggling with violence, is always to look support in another person. There's always going to be someone with whom you can, you know, like be together and resist together and trust and trying to fight these political oppressions together. Because in the end, these oppressions are not individual in the way of, it happens to me because sadly my life is like this. No. For us, it's a social problem. It's an historical problem. It's a political problem. Like, all these violences are actually the foundation of something so much bigger than us, you know? It is a patriarchal system. It is a capitalist and neoliberal system. It is a colonial system that needs this type of oppressions. It needs it to work, you know, to keep going. So we see in the collective and in care also, collectively, we see an answer for us.
Absolutely.
And we think that regarding like care, like talking about care in society, for us is the same. Like, this collective body, it's our best strategy to actually understanding care as a collective concern also, if we're doing it collectively, you know? Because generally what happens is that when we talk about care, it's like an individual issue, like a family issue. In other countries, sometimes in Europe, there's like a state of welfare that also can sometimes take care, you know, of people who don't have someone that can take care of them. But here in our context, it really depends on your family. If you don't really have like a family that's going to take care of you, you will just end it on the street. And actually in Chile, for example, the statistic of suicide in the elderly, like in older people, are very high. And it's because of that, because the pensions are very low. And also there's not like this system, this collective system of care. So we think that in this idea of understanding it as a society issue, you know, and as a collective issue, there's an answer to this problem. And for us, that's also a feminist point of view of looking at care.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's so true. And I think just having that support and also, having the support, not just from your family, but from other people is so important, because obviously, as you describe, it can often land on the shoulders of the women within households. I guess my very final quick question will be, what have you got coming up? What are you working on next?
Estamos, bueno, recientemente estrenamos Canciones para Cocinar, que es nuestra...
So right now, we just premiered a few months ago our recent performance called Canciones para Cocinar, which means songs for cooking. As a collective, we found, like many years ago, like from our very first performance, a strategy of creating songs, even if we're not musicians, you know, as a synthesis of all these ideas that we want to translate. So what we are doing with this performance is kind of put all these songs that we already created before and also some new ones, creating kind of a musical flyer, you could say, very precise to transmit certain ideas. So we took all these ideas, all these demands, all these theories, all these songs, you could say, creating kind of a performance, like a performatic concert, cooking a feminist revolution. That's the idea, actually. When we begin the performance, it's like, what are we going to cook? We are going to cook a feminist revolution. So for this, we need, you know, the historical demands, the newer demands, some newer theories and theses, some personal experiences. It's like we put everything together. And also with this performance, we've been collaborating with other activists and artists closer to the trans feminist movement, so trying to put other topics of the feminist issues and urgencies today that for us are really, really connected with the trans feminist issues, you know. And what we are trying to do is just to keep showing this performance, hopefully, in many different places, so we can bring these ideas to many different audiences, and hopefully trying to mobilize, you know, more people into these feminist urgencies and movements. Yes, for us, this is very important, that everything that we do don't end with what we are creating, you know?
Yeah.
But it's actually always an open call for action.
Amazing. Well, I hope it comes to the UK at some point. And if not, I look forward to seeing it online. Fingers crossed. Sevilla and Daphne, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been an absolute pleasure. And like I said, I'm really a big, big fan. So thank you so much for taking the time out. And I really look forward to seeing everything that you do next.
Thank you. Muchas gracias.
Huge thanks to Sabila and Daphne for joining us for this week's episode. If you'd like to learn more about Las Teses and their work, you can find links in the episode description. And thank you for listening to another episode of the ARPSIS podcast. If you are enjoying it, all we ask is that you subscribe wherever you listen and even share with friends and family. Only with your help can these truly important stories be heard. Thanks, and we'll see you next week for the next episode.